You're listening to Two Moms, Zero Attention Span, the podcast with your host, Jess Martini.
Hi, guys. Welcome to the Two Moms, Zero Attention Span podcast. I'm Jess, and today I am here with Menzi, or as you all know her, Menzennial from TikTok and Instagram. You guys have probably seen her from her Big Feelings series, where she cries on... where she the most viral one that I saw was when you were doing the kid upset over the blue colored cup, and she narrates the child's point of view, and it's a big perspective shift, and it's probably my favorite series that you've ever done. And she is also, on a personal note, just a wonderful person and a wonderful friend, and very thankful that we've met over the years. But hi, Menzi, thank you for joining.
Yes, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be on your podcast.
I'm excited to have you, and I'm good. Life's been busy, really busy. My kids are like at the age now with sports. I started working at a preschool, so life is busy. What about you?
We're down south right now and just as busy as ever. But I really wanted to tell you something happened since we've been down here when we were in the Keys.
Yeah.
We in a resort. And since this is your thing and I learned it from you, I want you to know that Jay got lost and I knew what to do because of you and your videos. There was a banquet sort of raffle thing happening at the resort that we were staying at, and he just disappeared into thin air. And I immediately started yelling about his description, and this like very kind mom who had a ton of kids, like sent her kids in every direction to find him. And we found him so fast, but I had a hard
time. I'm so glad that it happened, like that you found him so quickly. And that
it was right next to the ocean too. So it was just, it could have been so bad. It turned out he had went up some stairs. And so I thought he disappeared into this group of people, but he really was above us looking down.
If you guys don't know what she's talking about, so this is from a video that I did about what to do if your child ever goes missing in a crowded place. And because these things happen in a split second, and they happen to the very best parents. They happen to, you know, it's always when you think, oh, it'll never happen to me, and it happens, you know. So it's a video that I did about how to shout your kid's description and get everybody looking for your child. And it works. It works really, really fast. So I'm so glad that you were able to find him quickly. I know what?
No, it does. Like, I couldn't believe it. He was out of my sight for like seconds. I was right behind him, just a few feet. I saw him going into the crowd and he just vanished. It was unreal how fast it happens.
And the other thing is, too, is that when this happens, a lot of times people think, oh, he's probably right by me or whatever it is. And they start like quietly looking. And actually, the one time that I used this in my real life, it wasn't for my kid. It was for somebody else's kid that was in a play place. And I saw her quietly looking around the play place. And we had been chatting earlier. It was in the mall. And she asked me, she's like, have you seen him? And I took a quick glance around and he was not there at the play place. This little boy, he was two. And so I was like, what was he wearing? And she told me, and I just immediately started screaming it, started walking around as fast as I could to all the kiosk, all the other places. He was found all the way at the other side of the mall in the food court. Like, no, still had no shoes on because he was playing at the play place. Don't know how he got down to the food court, but he was clear across the mall. And he was two. He wasn't talking yet. It's not like he was going to respond to his name. But when they found him, when they found the little boy, they actually brought him back to me because I was the one who was screaming and shouting his name around the mall. And they found him at the other end of the mall before security even got down and got involved in the situation. So it works. It works quick. And then after that, I was like, everybody needs to know about this. So I started sharing that tip.
I never would have known had it not for your videos. That, like, when does it come up? It doesn't come up until it happens to you. We don't get like practice kids to practice with. We only get our, yeah.
Exactly. And people say, oh, you know, you don't want to be paranoid. You don't want to walk around paranoid. No, because it's not meant to make you feel paranoid. It's meant to make you feel prepared, you know? So that if, God forbid, that ever did happen, you at least have a plan of action. But I wanted to talk to you because this is kind of your thing that you talk about a lot. I wanted to talk about people's expectation of toddler behavior, because I feel like you address this in a way that makes people stop in their tracks and think, oh my gosh, I do expect a lot from my toddler, you know?
Oh my gosh, this gets me so worked up when people have these unrealistic expectations on these little kids that are just brand new here. And it is probably my favorite thing to talk about. It's also the season of life I'm in. I don't know if you would consider Jay, he's three, newly three, if that's really toddler, if he's more to being a little kid now, but people expect a lot from him. And I get kind of hard on myself because I feel like I sometimes expect a lot, and we just have to remind ourselves, like, they're new here. I mean, they're very new.
I feel like I, with my first, my oldest, my expectations were off. I was always, you know, it was almost like I put him under a microscope all the time, you know, and every little thing he did, I was trying to, you know, get him to that next step, that next level, you know, not that like, oh, I regret how I was, because a lot of the ways that I was with him, I am the exact same way with my third as well. But, you know, I put high expectations on him. And every time he did something that was age appropriate, I would try to fix it. I would try to, you know, intervene. And really, he was just being a kid, just being a toddler.
So by people that haven't had little kids for so long, like down where we are now, I mean, people have grandkids that are closer to Jay's age than their own kids. And it's just been a while since they've had a kid, you know, in their house all day or all night. And so I just think that they forget, and memories aren't so good. And people always say, my child never did that, or
lie.
And I'm like, it's just not true, because kids are humans that act like humans. So
it's such a lie. Whenever people say, oh, my kid never did this or my kid never did that, then I want to know, why not? Why did you have the only 2-year-old in the history of 2-year-olds that never threw a tantrum? Tell me, like, I want to know, because it doesn't, they're supposed to, they have all these emotions. They have such limited communication, such limited ways of expressing those emotions. Nobody's ever taught them how to regulate anything yet. So if you had a toddler, 1-year-old, 2-year-old, 3-year-old, and they never threw a tantrum, and that's the story you're going with, then I want to know more about that. Why didn't they? Because we're supposed to. We all, in that situation, being 2, 3 with limited communication and limited ways to express ourselves, would act in that way, would be throwing tantrums.
Feel better to just like reinvent history and tell untruths. If that makes you parent, then you have fun with that, because I do know better. I felt really lucky though. I worked in childcare right before becoming a mom. And so I had like babies and toddlers galore. And I had a really good idea of like what was realistic to expect. But everyone in my life, not so much.
I think I also had a huge leg up because I had people around me who gave me realistic expectations, and also who put realistic expectations on children. So I never had that like pressure of needing to have a quote unquote perfectly behaved at all time toddler, because there's no prize, cookie, or reward for having the best behaved toddler in the world. It's irrelevant. But then people judge themselves as parents based on how perfectly behaved these 2-year-olds are. And it's unfair to put that sort of expectation both on the child and on the parent. But I never had that sort of like societal or like family pressure on me to make my children behave in a way that was in age inappropriate, you know? So
I have that because even though I know and I have realistic expectations for him, my brain still kind of worries about what other people are thinking or if the neighbors can hear him, even if he's playing and he's happy and it's like he's being loud, but it's a joyful loud. I still am like, oh my gosh, everyone can hear. What are they thinking? Like, can we play quieter? And it's ridiculous. We shouldn't be worried about that. Kids need to be kids.
And it, so the other thing too is that I don't have the same like sort of fight or flight response when kids are doing very like typical kid things. It doesn't send me my body into like a panic to hear like a child throwing a temper tantrum, because there was a lot of things just quite, this is my theory, is because growing up I wasn't punished for a lot. And so when those sorts of situations come up with my own kids, it doesn't create this like tension within myself that I feel this need to like shut it down very quickly. And I see it with people around me. I see it with my husband. You know, the kids are throwing a tantrum and his immediate response is, or when they were little, they're my kids are older now. I have a 3-year-old and he doesn't really tantrum so much as he like kind of just like willfully defiant at times. Like it's not so much. It's not so much a tantrum as like I'm just not gonna do that, like
I feel like Jay does that too sometimes and it's just so out of character for him, but it's developmentally appropriate.
I don't think it's out of character for my son. I think he's really truly enjoying this new phase of life that he's in right now.
And then the adults like spiral, they get this big reaction, it makes it so much more fun, I think, because they know it will get under everyone's skin. And
oh, there was my son learned the word shit recently, and that was a big thrill for him. That was difficult because anytime he said it, he either got a big gasp from people or a big like roar of laughter and giggles. But either one of those responses was like exactly what he was looking for. Like, oh, I got a response, you know. So that was that. I'm glad that it's like short lived because he went to preschool and I was so nervous that he was going to drop the S word. But he hasn't. He hasn't. But what I was going to say is that my husband, you know, would get this like that he would almost join the kids in this escalated or like emotional dysregulation because they would get, you know, throw a tantrum or whatever it is. And then he would feel this need to like shut it down because it would make him feel so bad on the inside, make it like almost panicked, you know? And I saw it with my dad growing up too. My dad grew up in a house with a ton of yelling all the time. So anytime there was like raised voices, even if it was just in conversation, he would get immediately panicked, you know? And like, shh, we have neighbors, you know? And we're just talking in our own home.
So I think that I'm so good at explaining that kind of thing is because I go through it too. I was raised not in like a super gentle, respectful way. And so I do get triggered. Like I know exactly what those people are feeling. It's not, I'm in awe of how you were raised and how just solid you are and how you don't react in like you can just let it fly. Like I can't. I have to try really, really hard to just let those kinds of things go. And so I get it from, understand it from both sides really well.
I will say that, you know, there's a lot of things that I can let fly, but I don't want to paint it out like I've never lost my temper or that I haven't responded in a way that was unfavorable before, that I haven't had to make apologies. I'm also a person who gets overstimulated really easily. So, you know, have I lost my shit before? Yup. And you know, it is few and far between. But perfection in parenting doesn't exist. It happens to all of us. But typical kid behaviors really don't trigger me. You know, it really doesn't work me up. Things like kids spilling something after you told them like to be careful or whatever. You know, a lot of those things I watch the people around me who I love, and it really sends them over the edge. And it doesn't get me. And even as my kids are getting older, I noticed that there are things that I do feel accepting of, or I don't see as disrespect at all that others do, you know?
I agree with that completely. One of the ones that I've seen people in my life spiral over is the word no. Mm. The word coming out of a child's mouth sends them into a tailspin. And I am like, it's just a word. You just said a word. Settle down. Them thinking that they're being disrespected. It's like, they can say no though. It's.
Well, this is one of, I think maybe one of the misconceptions with gentle, respectful parenting is that you don't say no to your kids. That like somehow the word no is like taboo. Like, oh, these kids have never heard the word no. I use the word no, like, and yes, of course you want to give the kids choices. You want to give them, you know, some control over their environment. But there are times when the answer really is just no. Yeah. And it is what it is. And no is not like a taboo word in my house, not even close. It's actually a very, very important word. Your kids need to learn how to not only how to respect the no of others, but how to use it appropriately as they're growing up, when they're learning how to set their own boundaries for themselves. No is
my own experience. Like, I was raised, don't tell me no. Like, that you just can't say no. And you do grow up to not be able to speak up for yourself when you really should be. And it gets you into a lot of like terrible situations, honestly, where you don't feel strong enough to. Everyone should feel comfortable saying no. Like, it shouldn't be an issue, but it is. It can become quite the problem as you grow up when you've always been raised to just don't say no.
To people please. And then that's another thing is that I hear is like, oh, gentle parents aren't gentle people. I'm not trying to raise gentle people. I'm not a gentle person. I've never been a people pleaser. I've never done things just because it will make others happy. I'm a kind person. I am kind to my core and I treat people with respect. But if anybody thought that I was a doormat or that they were going to walk all over me, it's not going to happen. I've always had a voice. I've always been able to use my voice. I've been able to use it in my own home. It always mattered. And then you carry that into adulthood. So when people, that's like a big pushback. Oh, gentle parents aren't gentle people. I never pretended to be. I'm a kind person, certainly. But
there's a really great path to get you into permissive too, because I've witnessed that where like, they go from people pleasing like other adults and their partner around them, and then doing it to their kid, and the kid says they want this, want that, and they just kind of give in to everything just to try to make things easy with the kid, and it obviously backfires. But
I actually think it's also to regulate how they're feeling on the inside, because mm-hmm. something that I've seen especially with my husband in the beginning is that upholding boundaries in this sort of way was difficult for him. It was easy for him to shut it down immediately by like exerting power and control over the situation, you know, with that very old school. And then if that didn't get the immediate result, because really it just came down to him feeling very dysregulated in the moment with the tantrum or whatever, then he would end up giving in. And it would be like this very, angry, like, here, you know, sort of thing. Like if they were crying over something, whatever it was, but it was to regulate himself, you know,
less to do with the kid and more about them just needing it to stop, needing it to quiet down. And it's harder to keep the boundary in if no is no, and to like, yeah, I've seen that too, where, and I've been victim. I just wanted to stop. And like, then next time I feel like you're just teaching them that if they just push you hard enough, that you will give in. And yeah, or, you know, things like scree time or treats or stuff that isn't maybe the biggest deal. But when you are continually like not keeping your word with boundaries, it is a slippery slope.
And I've talked about this before. It's like a lot of people might view it who are used to like that very old school authoritarian, because I said so, do it now sort of thing, might view it as permissive if your kid is expressing emotions, if you are walking them through how to regulate those emotions instead of, you know, sending them to their room or forcing them to stop. But at the same time, you can still uphold your boundaries while doing that. You know, those things aren't, it's not one or the other. And I think that's one thing that is very difficult for people when they're first starting out with gentle parenting, and something that people should have a lot of grace for themselves with, is that a lot of times they're, as they're finding their groove with upholding boundaries, they'll kind of teeter between that authoritarian and permissive, trying to like find their groove and with how to uphold boundaries while without exerting, you know, without using those fear-based methods. And I think people should kind of have some grace for themselves during that learning curve while they're figuring out how to do that. And I would be a liar. What?
That everything is figure outable. Like, you can walk everything back. Like, parenting, nothing's ruined. Like, you can always reevaluate. It is never too late. That is so important to remember.
Yeah, and because this parenting style is more trial, you know, it is more individual based between the child and the kid and the connection and the communication, that there's going to be some trial and error there as you're figuring out what works for you as your parent and what works for your kid. And mm-hmm. people tend to feel like they're failing if they maybe just had some error. Maybe they tried something new and it just didn't work out, you know, or it's not working for their kid and they need to try a new method or, you know, a new way of communicating, whatever it is. And it feels like, oh, I'm failing. No, you're not failing. That parent, there's a lot of trial and error involved in parenting in general.
That I like life. It's chaotic and sometimes you get sloppy and you're not keeping the same routines, or I don't know, it's just like lately in my life we're down south, we're not in our normal home up in Montana, and we've had a lot of company, and it's just he hasn't had his normal routine, and he's also gotten sick quite a bit. And I talked about this on my page recently. I felt this way with the way our life is going. We're not in our normal house up in Montana, we're down south, and we've had a lot of company, and Jay's gotten sick so many times, more than he ever has in his entire life. And so much of our boundaries and routine just went out the window, and I have felt like I'm failing, but everything is figure-outable, and I do have to get back on track. It just takes a lot of work. It's so much easier to just let it all derail.
Mm-hmm. Also, too, as your kids get older, you're constantly figuring out this like next stage of life and reestablishing certain boundaries, because your boundaries are changing as your kids are getting older and growing and they're able to take on, you know, more responsibility or, you know, more freedom than they had before. And a lot of the things as my kids have gotten older, a lot of the changes that we've had in our routine or reestablishing of things is a conversation between me and my kids. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, if they say, oh, well, we want our bedtime to be at 11 p.m. and, you know, we want to stay up all night playing video games. Like, that's not how it works. It's not the kids just running the show. But it is a conversation about things that everybody feels good with reestablishing our new boundaries, because kids do need boundaries and they need structure and they need routine. And they really count on you as the parent for that. But they don't need to be constantly overpowered in their day-to-day life. And I found that it's actually been, you know, when me and my kids talk about it with our changes in our bedtime routine and our schedule, they were wanting a little bit more time just to have quiet time in their room together or alone or whatever it was, to do their own thing uninterrupted before bed. And we were able to like restructure the bedtime routine in a way that I felt like, okay, we're still getting to bed on time. Everything's still going the way it's supposed to be, where they get plenty of sleep before school and they're still able to get up on their own. And they get what they need, which is more quiet time and time to just unwind and do whatever they want. And it's a conversation between the two of us. And we've had, you know, some of that with the screen time too, with just reevaluating. And I think sometimes people think that might look, and it's funny to think that some people think that those sorts of things look almost like disrespect, because my son was explaining to me that he felt that a new boundary that had been put in place wasn't talked about enough and that it felt unfair. And he's telling me about this and he's saying, you know, we didn't agree to this and I didn't even know about it. And, you know, you made this and it doesn't feel fair. And as he's talking to me, I know that an onlooker listener is giving me a side eye like, oh, this kid's really, you know, but he's allowed to say that. He's allowed to express himself. There's nothing disrespectful about telling me how he feels about a new boundary that was put in place. Did it change the boundary? No.
Just wanting like a heads up, a little bit of a warning to like adjust. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And really not that hard to give them.
No. And it doesn't mean that you have to change. I didn't change my boundary.
Exactly.
But he's allowed to tell me how he feels about it. There's no disrespect involved in that, you know? And also I don't mind when my kids say what or why, or ask me questions about things. I don't mind when other kids do it to me either. Which was an interesting conversation I had with someone too, where they were like, I don't, you know, you let them say what to you, you let them say why to you. And it wasn't my kid she was talking about. It was actually a neighbor's kid. And I was like, yeah, you know, it doesn't bother me. I think they should know the whys of like they should know the whys behind what they're doing and why they're doing it. That's so important as you grow up in a, as an adult and you gain your own critical thinking skills. You need to know the what's and the whys of what it is that you're being asked to do. And so you can make those executive decisions for yourself.
And that is something adults are so guilty of. I get the what and why from adults like crazy. It is, why can't kids do it too? They're not hurting anything by wanting to understand.
Well, a lot of that too is just ingrained in us. It's ingrained in us that like that's disrespect. That's them not respecting your authority in the situation. But I think a lot of times we still misconstrue fear and respect over and over again.
Yeah, respect.
But I feel like this is a good place to wrap it up. Before we go, did you have, if you, you know, could leave on one final thought or, you know, for people who are in it with toddlers or have toddlers right now that they're dealing with, maybe they're newly parents of toddlers, what would be your final thoughts?
I feel like is when we're dealing with other adults, our peers, our siblings, our partners, I feel like we are so, it's so easy for us to kind of see where they're coming from and to be like, well, they're under a lot of stress or, well, they have a rough upbringing. Like there's just, we can give all these excuses for their behavior, but we don't do that ever for our little children. And I know that it is hard to like, look at this kid. Like I look at my child and he has my dream life. Like I never dreamed of being able to do any of the things that he does. And so it's hard to look at him and be like, no, he is struggling. And that his problems are valid. I feel like a lot of us can't do that for our kids because we look at their life and we're like, they have it so much better than I did. How are they possibly complaining? How are, like, their preferences just don't matter. They have it so good. But they, all they know is this life that they've had with us and this experience, and that preferences are fair to have. And just that they have boundaries too. They're overtired. They're grumpy. They're hungry. They don't get their way. And just, I don't understand why people can't like try to understand where they're coming from a little bit more.
I would totally agree with that. And I feel like that is like, feels like a really good place to wrap up for today, that because I do think that that's something that I feel like we both talk about a lot, is the way that we hold kids to higher expectations than we hold adults sometimes too, where we're able to empathize or sympathize with adults being tired, adults being worn out, adults having a rough day. But then we don't give that same sort of grace to the people who have only been on this planet for like 3, 4, 5 years, which is interesting.
Just how people don't even notice that they're doing it. I've told a story before where like a stranger yelled at Jay in public. And when I told the story, everyone's go-to was like, she was having a hard time. She has this, she has that. She might have this diagnosis. Like there's probably a really good reason for her to yell at your kid in public. And I was like, okay, well, I don't hear any of that same energy when kids are yelling in public. What kid would scream at someone else in public and everyone would just, like, no one would be like, no, there's so many reasons why this is understandable. And like, we just, the way they acted like that was totally okay and totally valid. But when kids are yelling on an airplane, it's no.
I agree with that completely. But thank you so much for joining today. I really, really appreciate it as always. And we'll definitely have to do this again sometime. And I always appreciate your perspective and just the empathy that you bring to the little ones. And I think you do a really good job of helping people to see things from the child's point of view, which is really powerful parenting tool, honestly.
I hope so. I love to create those videos and I don't ever want to stop.
I know. I miss them. I haven't seen one in a while. All right. Well, I will let you run, but thank you so much for joining.
Thanks, Jess.
Bye.